Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Well, good morning. It's 6:04. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us at myfaithradio.com. What if kids did not come with instructions? That's not a what-if matter, actually. That's a statement of fact. I've never heard of a child being delivered with instructions on how to care for it, delivered to the parents at the same time. It's a common thread among parents and, quite frankly, with youth pastors and youth leaders, grandparents as well. But parents in particular, moms and dads, struggle with this one. How do I navigate the ever increasing difficulty of the new terrain that lies ahead with each passing month, with each passing year? Our good friend Mike Haley from Focus on the Family, he's here to address the issue when kids don't come with instructions, raising highly capable kids. He'll talk with us coming up later this morning here on Faith Radio, and we're looking forward to that. As you might have heard in a promotional announcement that we heard just a few moments ago, and this is so timely, I really appreciate his availability, our good friend Abdu Murray, who is a very interesting fellow, born and raised in a Muslim family. He has since become an evangelical Christian, and a pretty fascinating guy, quite frankly, but he's got a book out. It's called Grand Central Questions, and he'll weigh in. He does this periodically, but he'll join us later this morning. Because we have, in case you haven't noticed, and I've tried to gently and sensitively over these last, 10 weeks or so that I've been here hosting this morning show, tried to gently and sensitively but diligently point out that the world is upside down. It really, really is. And Abdu Murray is just so expert and so skilled in defining and articulating for us the truth of the ideological, philosophical, and spiritual struggles that surround us here in the United States of America. We think we're insulated. We think we're isolated from it. People are, I believe, still hoping for the United States of America to get back to normal. Let me tell you, what we have known historically as normal in the United States, it's gone. It's gone. It really is. And that's not to say that we can't improve things here in the U.S., but for us to believe that somehow our homeland remains safe and the Christian community in particular can kind of insulate itself and live in peace and harmony without intrusion, without hostility, and to think that somehow we will be secure and safe as a people, Americans, with all the ideological and philosophical tension and the murder and mayhem that's going on all over the world, driven in no small part by this just deplorable group that calls itself the Islamic State, or ISIS, ISIS as it's pronounced sometimes. They started off being called ISIS. Nobody else knew what else to call them. The Islamic State of Iraq and Syria is what they were purporting to be. They were trying to turn Iraq and the country of Syria into a radically Islamic government, where everybody else who disagreed with them got their heads chopped off and murdered and such. Well, IS, the Islamic State, is now a global army like none other than we've ever seen before. And if you are under the impression, if I am under the impression that somehow we can be insulated from this, that is profoundly wrong. And Abdu Murray, like nobody else I've seen or heard, quite frankly, articulates what's really going on and what I believe to be and what he believes to be a very biblical, Christ-like response to it. It doesn't mean that we bury our heads in the sand. To be Christ-like. Being Christ-like in a time such as this doesn't mean that we refuse to call evil evil when it's staring us in the face. At the same time, we don't make assumptions about everybody belonging to a particular people group. Certainly, we don't make assumptions about people according to their ethnicity and gender and those kinds of things. But Abdu Murray joins us coming up later this morning to help us decipher what is and is not going on in the world as things go upside down. All of this, plus did you hear the news about previously divorced couples, couples who perhaps cohabitated, lived together before they got married, and single mothers who are seeking to marry? Have you heard this this very, very new striking pastoral choice, if you will, about how to deal with people who have, quote-unquote, lived in sin and not conducted their relational life in terms that the church would want it to be conducted, but are now seeking to get married? We'll tell you about that coming up in just a few moments. You're listening to Faith Radio. It's now 6:09, and I'm Austin Hill.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
6:10, good morning. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill here weekday mornings, 6 till 8, as you get your day started. We seek to connect faith to life, and we try to be informative and challenging and hopeful and helpful all at the same time. By the way, thank you for your support of Faith Radio. We cannot do this all on our own. We are fully listener-supported. This is not a government-funded broadcast operation, nor are we... we don't sell advertising. We don't bring advertisers on board and take payment to air their commercial announcements and such. That's just not how it works. We need your support. We thank you for your support. Come on board anytime. Find out more at myfaithradio.com. Did you hear about the rather striking move that was made by Pope Francis? Now, I know just as sure as I say the word Pope or the name Pope Francis, some Protestant pastors and lay ministry leaders and such automatically tune out and say, well, I'm not Catholic, and so this doesn't matter so much to me, and I'm not under his authority, I don't recognize his authority, so let's move on. I get that, and I'm not here to try to solve the split or the division between Catholics and Protestants. That's may not happen in my lifetime, but I alone in a 7-minute segment on a talk show, I'm not going to figure all that out, okay? But this is a rather interesting development, and I do believe that Christians in all walks of life, and Christians, both Protestant and Catholic, should take note of this. Pope Francis conducted a wedding ceremony. He's begun conducting wedding ceremonies with people who previously, quote-unquote, lived in sin before seeking to marry one particular individual. Now, let me explain what I mean by this, and your definition of, quote, living in sin as it regards relationships and sexuality, it might be what we're talking about here. It might not be. I suppose everybody's got kind of their own definition. But I would just say this very respectfully, that it has been, for most of my adult life, I think this is probably the case, it has been something that pastors, I'll leave the Catholics out of it for a moment, and no disrespect if you are a member of the Catholic Church, but just among Protestants and evangelical Christian pastors, it has been a point of struggle, I will say, as to know what to do when a man and a woman come to a pastor or come to a church and say, we want to get married. We'd like to set a date, and we'd like to book out the dates here in the worship sanctuary. And by the way, how much does it cost to rent the social hall? We want to do the reception there. It has been, over the years, an increasing struggle for pastors and even lay ministry leaders to know how to handle that situation when the couple comes to them and they're already living together. Now, presumably, if people are cohabitating, there's a sexual relationship there, and according to Scripture, according to the teachings of the Church, sex and sexuality are to be reserved for after one is officially betrothed, married. And I'll just cite an example from my own life. My wife and I, we were married back in 1991, and back in late 90 and early 91, we were enrolled in a premarital class. We had to take a course at the church that we were attending at the time. I call it a course. It was pretty informal, but we needed to show up regularly and work through some curriculum and participate in a group. And there were about, six or eight couples altogether in this group. And it was led by the pastor of marriage and families, was his title, at the church that we attended. My wife and I, interestingly, when we were dating, when we were engaged, we were probably in the roughly the one-third of the entire class at our church that was not living together. We were, for all intents and purposes, trying to play it right and follow the teachings of the church, follow the scriptures as we understood them. So we did not live together prior to getting married. What I'm saying is the other two-thirds, roughly speaking, the other two-thirds of the premarital class, they had already moved in together, or they had lived together for a while in one case, and then they said, okay, we got to peel off and back off from this. We'll move out. One will move out, and we'll split up for the time being until we get married. But I remember after the fact, after my wife and I were married, maybe a couple of years or so afterwards, having a very frank discussion with the pastor of our church who taught that premarital class. And he said, this is just the most difficult thing for me. And this was in 1991. This was the early 1990s. And the pastor said, I'm not sure how to handle these things. Being married, getting people united in marriage, that's an objective, that's a goal, that's a good thing. But do we necessarily turn a blind eye to people who may be living in sin prior to marriage? How do we handle this? He said, I take it on a case-by-case basis, but it's something I struggle with. Well, that was about 20 years ago. When we come back, I'll tell you about some of the latest trends in cohabitation and something very interesting that happened, a decision, a choice that was made by Pope Francis that, it's worth noting, whether you're Protestant or Catholic. We'll talk about that just in just a moment. It's now 6:16. You're listening to Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, I'm Austin Hill. Hey, coming up at about 6:35 this morning, our great friend Colonel Tony Schaefer, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, retired from the U.S. Army. He now spends his days training military officers. He's also with a couple of different think tanks in Washington, D.C., one of them being the Center for Advanced Defense Studies. Just a great individual, a fine gentlemen. I'm proud for my son to know Colonel Tony Schaefer, quite frankly. But Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us about 6:35 this morning to give us his assessment of where we have been over the last few days since President Obama announced his plans to combat, quote-unquote, ISIS, the Islamic State terror group, the Islamic State radically Islamic militant group is a better way to put it. It's interesting, the reaction that our country is getting around the world. And whether or not we're really seriously prepared to deal with this, or if we're just kind of in this passive state here in the United States where we just kind of roll over and say, hey, listen, come on in and do what you got to do. We wouldn't want to offend anybody. I mean, that sounds extreme. That sounds ridiculous. But in some ways, our nation collectively behaves that way. We'll get Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer's assessment of that coming up in about 15 minutes here at 6:35 on the Faith Radio Network. So on this issue of marriage and cohabitation, now here's why I brought up the name of Pope Francis. Coming up this weekend, he will conduct a wedding ceremony. And you can imagine, maybe if you're not Catholic, maybe you don't imagine this, but for Catholics, this is a really big deal to attend a Mass where the head of the Church himself, the Pope, is presiding. And then to have people get married in the context of that Mass, well, that's an even bigger deal. There will be 20 couples, all from the country of Italy, by the way, and they will be participating in a wedding Mass conducted by Pope Francis coming up this weekend. Now, here's the significance to tie it back to the cohabitation and living in sin, quote-unquote, before marriage. Over half of these couples have been living together prior to going to the altar and getting married officially this weekend. Some of them have procreated and had children, okay? Now, just to be very, very clear, cohabitation absolutely goes against the Roman Catholic Church's teaching on sexuality and marriage. And priests typically encourage couples living together to separate before they actually walk the aisle and get married. Some priests, and I had this come up just ironically with one of my neighbors in my neighborhood. My wife and son and I, we moved into a new home earlier in, late spring, earlier this year, and I'm still getting to know my neighbors. So I was out in the yard, and we were playing with our dogs, and this individual that I've gotten to know, he starts telling me about the struggles that he and his wife had getting married in their Catholic Church, because each of them had been previously married, and in one case, the church did not recognize the divorce of the previous spouse. You know, there's legal divorce, all the legal paperwork is drawn up, and officially the couple was no longer married anymore. But then the church, the Catholic Church, has this thing called annulment. And this gentleman's wife, she had not officially annulled her previous marriage, according to the church. This man was very upset with the local Catholic parish and saying, my goodness, you know, you'd think they'd want us to be married and yada, yada, yada. My point is that this absolutely is a point of contention among parishioners, among lay people, if you will, but it's a really big point of struggle for a lot of clergymen. Catholic and Protestant. As I was stating before in the previous segment, back in the early 1990s, when my wife and I were getting married, 20 plus years ago, when we went through a premarital class at our evangelical Protestant church, we were in the minority with this group of other young couples that wanted to get married, in as much as we did not live together. And the trends of cohabitation and living together and even having children out of wedlock have only increased in our country over these last many decades. They haven't decreased so much. So this is noteworthy. The Pope, without a whole lot of pomp and circumstance, I think is kind of signaling, certainly to the Catholic Church, but I think this is something. There's some wisdom here, I'll put it that way. I'm not advocating for the Catholic Church. I'm simply saying that I think Christian pastors could look to this and recognize that in some circumstances, and I would agree, I would maintain that circumstances and situations are always different and they're always unique in each and every instance. But in some circumstances, yes, the greater good is served when a couple who has not followed the teachings of the scriptures, perhaps they lived together in sin prior to getting married, but they want to tie the knot, so to speak. They want to be bound in holy matrimony, if you will. The greater good is served to say, yes, let's make this official, let's get you married. Some pastors have already resolved this. I know of a friend of mine who pastors a small church in Northern California. And I've had this conversation with him many a time, and he says, yes, I really struggle with this, but I honestly do believe that the greater good is served by saying, okay, let's make sure the husband, the wife, or the bride and the groom, as it were, make sure that they understand the biblical precepts and teachings about marriage, but let's get them married. That's a good thing. And here the Pope, in many ways, is, I would say, kind of bucking the trend of decades, if not a couple of centuries of tradition and rather rigid, rather stodgy edicts within the Catholic Church and saying, let's serve the greater good here, let's get these couples married. So it's something to think about. If you work in lay ministry in an evangelical or Protestant church, if you're a pastor, again, this is not to say that the Catholic Church sets the tone necessarily for the Protestant world. It doesn't. But some interesting food for thought. And it sounds like Pope Francis is bucking the trends, as it were, to try to make sense of otherwise confusing situations. It's now 6:26. When we come back, let's take a look at what's to come on the Neil Stavem's program, Connecting Faith. We'll get to that coming up next. It's now 6:27. It's Faith Radio.
person of Jesus means so much. Here's Alistair Begg from Truth for Life.
Saul of Tarsus was absolutely committed to the destruction of the followers of Jesus until that encounter on the Damascus Road. And interestingly, his question was, "Who are you, Lord?" It suddenly dawned on him that this Jesus that he had been persecuting via the followers of Jesus was actually a resurrected Lord and King. And that's who Jesus is. That's how we're introduced to him in the pages of the New Testament. That's how we come to believe in him as a Savior and a friend. Not simply somebody who takes his place in the pantheon of deities throughout time, but rather the one at whose feet every knee will eventually bow and every tongue confess that he is in fact Lord and King.
Living by faith together, Faith Radio.
On Faith Radio, SRN News coming up in just minutes. What would it take for a spiritual revival to take place in the United States? Yesterday on Connecting Faith with host Joe Rathmanner, she talked with Gerald Long of Alpha USA about what happens when God's people understand their calling to prayer. Let's listen in.
One of the key words is intentionality. Am I living my life day-to-day for me, or am I living my day-to-day life for Jesus and for God? And of course, God's heart is for people. God's heart is he's desperately loving, wants to love, wants to draw those people back to himself. Reconciliation, this message of reconciliation through Jesus. That's his heart in us. That's the Holy Spirit in us. And so if we're sensitive to that, we'll be looking to put him first. Who do I know who's hurting at the moment? Maybe their marriage has broken up. Maybe they've lost their job. How can I come alongside them and show them God's love and kindness? And in that environment, then they're going to start asking questions. They're going to sense people. You know, we don't realize that so much. We had a guy I was playing golf with, and he was a Navy SEAL, and we intentionally would invite one guy in R4 who didn't know Christ. And first time he came along, he was every other word was a swear word. And bit by bit, he stopped swearing as he came out with us. But, you know, at the end of the season, he said to us, you know, every time I was with you guys, I sensed this energy, this light. I felt encouraged. I felt good for the rest of the day. Well, who's that? That's God in us. That's Jesus in us through the Holy Spirit touching. We don't realize how much of an impact we're having on people just being with them, just spending time with them. And so that's why we have to go and be with people, spend time with them. And then be open, be listening to what are they saying? Where are they interested? And there's so many tools we can have, especially today. You know, there's a book I've written called The Breakthroughs of a Parable. Give it to people as a little gift to say, hey, read this. There's three questions we ask. Maybe there's more to life than what you're seeing. Maybe there's a heaven and a hell. And maybe how I'm living my life is hurting other people. And we've had some incredible, it was one pastor, he's been praying for his brother for 25 years, gave him this little parable, this little book called The Breakthrough, and he came to Christ. Now, it wasn't just that, it was a combination of things, but these little tools. God's Not Dead, that film. Hey, let's watch this movie together, and let's have a chat about it. Let's talk about what we heard. I'd love to hear your views. Be interested in those views. So often we want to push down our views on people. No, listen to what their views are. And be interested in their views. And as we do that, the walls start coming down, and that's what we see on Alpha. As the walls of mistrust and pride and whatever things come down, they hear the gospel. And when they hear the gospel, there's power in the gospel for salvation. So our job is to love people, not to judge them, love them. And as we love them, the walls come down, and the Holy Spirit does what only he can do, is just to bring people to faith in Christ.
Gerard Long of Alpha USA on Connecting Faith just yesterday with host Joe Rathmanner. Now, coming up on today's edition of the program, Neil Stavem hosts. He will welcome musician and theologian Michael Card to walk through the Book of John. Michael Card, what an intriguing fellow and what a studious, learned man. That's on Faith Radio coming up today at 12 noon with host Neil Stavem. It's now 6:31. Good morning and welcome. You're listening to Faith Radio right here, right now. I'm Austin Hill. SRN News is next. morning at 6:35. This is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings, 6 till 8, as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful while you get your day started. We connect faith to life. Coming up later this morning, what do we do with kids that don't come with instructions? You know, I've never heard of a child being born into this world. And in that process, the parents are given an owner's manual, so to speak, or an instruction manual. Doesn't work that way, but we've got an expert on parenting joining us. Coming up into the 7 o'clock hour, our great friend Mike Haley from Focus on the Family to talk about some of the difficult points along the way in the process of parenting. We'll get to that forthcoming. Over the weekend, and as we started the week yesterday, we were treated to more news of yet another beheading of a Western person, a person from the free Western world, at the hands of the ISIS, or Islamic State, radical Islamic militant group. That makes three in less than 6 weeks, actually. Two Americans, the latest beheading, the latest victim, was a gentleman from the UK. We've also been treated to stories saying that nearly a dozen men, all from the state of Minnesota, have joined forces to fight with the Islamic State, whatever that means. And over the last 24 hours, we saw reports of a woman from the state of Colorado seeking to travel abroad so she could serve as a nurse and actually provide medical care and comfort to men who are involved in the Islamic State radical militant group. What sense do we make of this? I want to respectfully say that this is no time, absolutely no time, for the Christian community to close its eyes, close its ears, bury its collective cranium in the sand, and pretend this isn't happening. Here to help us sort out the details, our good friend, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, retired from the U.S. Army. He now trains military officers. He's also with the London Center for Policy Research and the Center for Advanced Defense Studies. And Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer, thanks very much for joining us. Welcome back to the program.
Austin, thank you. Thanks for having me. Good to be on.
Good to be with you. As this news broke last week, and President Obama actually revealed his plan to deal with ISIS, we'll get to that in just a few moments, but I actually heard you on another nationwide broadcast, and the president was asserting that which is driving the Islamic State really has nothing to do with Islam or the Muslim religion. And you made the point of saying to say that ISIS has nothing to do with Islam is like saying that Dunkin' Donuts has nothing to do with donuts. That was a memorable line. But what do you mean by that? Where are you going with that? Give us some clarity, if you would.
Two things to clarify. First off, the radical Islamists, this is not simply about ISIS. My second part of my comment, which you probably caught as well, is, look, this is not simply about a single terrorist group who is gaining ground. This is about the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood and other offshoots, Al-Qaeda, Ansar al-Sharia, they're all cut from the same cloth, and that cloth is radical Islam. So, Austin, until we call the enemy out for who and what he is, you will continue to basically miss them. We have engaged these folks and won every tactical battle over the past 12 years, and yet we've made no progress because here they are coming back once more. So we've really got to get at the root. And this goes back to my second point, is that this goes back to the 13th century. And again, I don't want to have to bring into a lot of ancient history here, but this issue, this radical Islamic issue, this idea of jihad, of proselytization by the sword, of basically you conform or you die, this goes back literally hundreds of years. So we've got to deal with this for what it is. This is a conflict between two civilizations. Our civilization, chooses to take political action, debate, and interaction as our method of dealing with differences, rather than dealing with an ancient, horrific approach to organization. And let me be clear on this, to your audience especially.
Yes.
I don't believe this is religion. As much as they call it the Islamic faith, it is essentially fascism. It's a manipulation of a religion for purposes of subjugation. So
it's an ideology, not so much a religion, in other words.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, what are we to make of the fact that, as I pointed out, I mean, this news broke last week. It would appear as though we've got almost 12 men, I think it's 11 guys, all from the state of Minnesota, that have come on board to, quote-unquote, fight on behalf of the Islamic State. And just as I pointed out, over the last 24 hours or so, a woman in the state of Colorado, who I believe by professional training was a nurse, And she was stopped by federal authorities, but she was seeking to fly to the Middle East and, quote-unquote, serve, providing medical care to these Islamic State's radical militants. I mean, we've got Americans joining up with these forces. Help us understand that.
Well, this is the what has been going on for years. I was with Catherine, my good friend Catherine Herridge, last night in an awards dinner for her. And Catherine wrote a book called The Next Wave a few years ago and talked about radical Islamic movements. And she was prescient in her prediction that you would have people both self-recruiting, which is a lot of this. They see this what's going on, and they're drawn to it. These are people who have basically detached themselves from society. They're looking for some purpose. And this gives them great purpose. Wrong purpose, but a purpose. And so when you see this sort of thing going on, when ISIS shows itself to be what we call the strong horse, this imagery within their faith is very important. This becomes the rallying cry and place to go. And simply put, some of these guys are just drawn to it because they're sociopaths. This is an opportunity to go kill, maim, harm, without any regard to accountability. So it's a combination of things that really do draw people into this.
And
unfortunately, we have people showing up there who are tragically, you know, victimized by it, by the aid workers.
Right. All right. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he's with the London Center for Policy Research. He's also with the Center for Advanced Defense Studies. Tony, stand by. Quick break. We'll continue in just a moment. This is Faith Radio. It's now 6:42, and I'm Austin Hill. Stay with us. On Faith Radio, I'm Austin Hill. Still to come, some expert advice on what to do with our kids when they don't come with instructions. And I've never heard of a child being born into the world with an instruction manual. So that's pretty much all of us who are parents and grandparents. We'll get some expert advice on that coming up into the 7 o'clock hour. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he is retired from the U.S. Army. He is with the London Center for Public Policy Research and the Center for Advanced Defense Studies. He also helps to train military officers going forward into the future. He's experts in the national security dilemmas that our country faces right now. He's on our guest line. Tony, you're no stranger to this. I want to read just a little segment here from a news story that was published in the New York Times yesterday, noting that there are private research groups, like the ones you work for, but similar groups, that have determined that militants for the Islamic State have traveled to Mexico. They're just miles away from the United States border. They plan to cross over the otherwise unsecure border of the U.S. and Mexico and launch car bomb attacks and perhaps take Americans hostage and create mayhem that way. You've written a book on this subject, I believe. How serious is the threat that ISIS may be here in the United States as you see it?
Oh, it's imminent. This is one of those issues. It's kind of, you know, Austin, as much as I kind of feared writing the book when I thought about it, it's kind of like it's obvious. They're going to figure it out if we don't highlight it and try to do something about it. That's why they wrote the book. The Southwest border is insecure, is completely insecure. Governor Perry has done what he can to use his National Guard and others to try to secure the border.
In Texas.
Yeah. But the bottom line is this. The whole border cannot be protected the way it's being done, and President Obama has continued to completely ignore this as a solid, known, existential threat that we have to deal with. And, yes, these guys want to get into the country. They want to start creating the mayhem, which they brought to Iraq and Syria. They want to bring that here. That they want to import that into us. And so if we continue to kind of have this fanciful life that everything is just fine, we're all protected here, we're going to wake up to a very, very challenging reality very soon, because indeed, Austin, these people want to come here. They want to kill people. They want to hold hostages. And as we talked about last night here in the event I was at, these people literally love death more than we love life, and that's, they have no fear, and they have no qualms about killing innocents. They beheaded people. If you really want to see that here, then we should just do nothing, because it's on its way right now.
Colonel Schaefer, comment, if you would, on a common strand of thought. I won't say that it's dominant, but it certainly is prevalent, I would say, among the evangelical Christian community, and I suspect a good bit of the Catholic Christian community in America, and that is a notion of compassion and the notion that we need to be welcoming to the stranger, amid this invasion at our border that's been going on for the bigger part of this year. In particular, that sense of compassion is focused towards children who have been sent by their parents to just, you know, keep walking northward and go into the United States and they'll take care of you. There is this mindset among clergy and a lot of lay people who say, hey, we just need to welcome these folks and care for them. I'm all about compassion and, as the scriptures command, to offer a cup of cool water in Jesus' name, so to speak. I fear that at times we're being kind of naive. Comment on that if you would.
We are. Two things. Yes, my family came here as immigrants at the turn of the last century. I am all for immigration. I am not for the unmitigated movement of people across an insecure border. And frankly, you know, we have no right to drain these countries of their children. I think it's totally insane and arrogant to think that we have the right to allow these people to be pushed in our country. What happens to those countries? Those people should be there in their home countries helping their countries become better. If everybody comes here because it's better, where they come from will never get better and will continue to feed the problem. So we've got to look at this as a long-term issue. As well, we have to be much more aggressive in our own protection. As much as I think we all want to be nice, to be supportive, the first time a bomb goes off in the Toys R Us here in Manhattan, where I'm at right now, people are going to say, well, how do we not see this coming? Well, we have seen it coming, and we need to protect our children as much as any other child out there. With that said, those children coming across the border need to go back to their homes, to their countries, and seek change to make their countries better rather than coming here to be in our country.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he is with the Center for Advanced Defense Studies, also the London Center for Public Policy Research, two think tanks, both of which are headquartered here in the United States. He's in the Washington, D.C. area, or at least that's where he's typically from. He's actually in New York City right now, as I understand it. Tony, there is just so much to this issue, and I don't live in fear, but I am concerned, I am a little fearful, that far too few Americans are actually perceiving the potential threats at our border and everywhere else in the United States, and we prefer to bury our heads in the sand. There certainly is hope for the future, but just as we talked to you here in these last few minutes, my goodness, you took us back to 13th century history and the Dark Ages, as it were, which, by the way, that bit of history entails some rather unflattering things about the story of Christian history as well
both
as Islamic
sides.
History.
Yes, neither side had the high ground for that one. That's correct.
Not at all, and hence a Reformation and
right,
some
exactly
some improvements in our understanding of the Christian scriptures. But there's a history to this. There is a threat, the likes of which we've never known before. If you could boil it down, one or two things that every American, and in particular every Christian American, needs to know about what's going on here.
Well, that's a great point. The first thing that every Christian American needs to know is pray for their version of Reformation. I mean, as you pointed out, Austin, our side, the Christian side, went through this essentially giving up of armed basically trying to recruit people via the sword. The Muslim faith has to give that up. They have to do that, not us. They have to figure it out for themselves. We can pray for that. Secondly, invest in your own security. Be aware of what's going on. Look at what the long-term consequences of our actions or lack of actions intend to your family and to those around you. It's not simply being nice. It's all about trying to figure out what you have to do to protect your brother, to protect your sister, and protect the nation, and to be an active member in that very protection. Just think about things before you act, and I think that's a good thing for everybody to always do.
Tony, give us the title of this new book that has just been published that you've written about the issues at the border.
It's called The Last Line, and it's a novel, but it's based on real facts, so it's out now.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Center for Advanced Defense Studies, London Center for Public Policy Research. You'll find him at myfaithradio.com. Tony, you're a guiding light in troubled times. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Austin. Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you. It's 6:52. This is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. When we come back, let's check in with Susie Larson in her program, Live the Promise. We'll do that next. See, this is one of those ultimate air guitar songs, at least for me. I love Stephen Cruz Chapman, and I love acoustic guitar, so there. It's 6:53. You're listening to Faith Radio. And I'm Austin Hill. Live the Promise with Susie Larson. It airs every weekday afternoon, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time. Yesterday, Susie welcomed to the program author and speaker Erin Smalley, as Erin talked about her newest book, The Wholehearted Wife. Let's listen in.
I love how honest you and Greg both are about coming into marriage. You're like, we're two different people with different tastes. And when things got hard, Erin, that's when most people would say, I married the wrong person. They would check out. But when I look at what you guys have now, you know, it's like you wouldn't trade it for anything, but you persevered. So go back to that place, some of the thoughts that went through your mind as a young married person going, what in the world have I done? And what was the tipping point that started to turn things around for you?
You know, really, the exact thing that you said, did I marry the wrong person? I mean, we both were thinking that, and we didn't know what to do. We hadn't done real quality premarital education, which we scream from the top of the mountainside, hillsides now, that that is such a key to a successful marriage. But we hadn't done that. I thought he would know it all because he was Gary Smalley's son. Well, in many ways, he thought he knew it all, but that left me.
And that was a problem, too.
Yes, that was a whole other issue. But, you know, 1 year and 1 month, 13 months into our marriage, we found out we were pregnant. And kind of not our timing, but very much God's timing, which it turned out to be for the very best. Because it really made us realize we have to grow up here. We have to start doing this differently. We really got stuck, especially around conflict. We didn't understand that conflict can actually be a blessing in your relationship if you walk through it in a healthy way. And we definitely did not. And so really, Taylor, who's now 20, was kind of the key to us going, okay, we've got to do this differently. We're in this for the long haul. We said, you know, divorce isn't going to be an option for us. And so how do we do this in a way that works? And that's honoring to both of us and to the Lord.
Well, Erin, you heard my question at the top of the show about how do we as women, how can we and do we influence our marriage, whether we realize it or not? I would love for you to answer that question.
You know, again, so often who we want to focus on is the other person. You know, I've had lots of fun for many years focusing on what Greg is doing or is not doing. And the bottom line is that is an option in a marriage relationship to do that, but it's not going to ultimately get you where you want to be in this relationship. When you're focusing on them and criticizing them and nagging them about what they are or aren't doing, it steals an opportunity you have for you. That is, if you focus on who you can control, and that's you, that you have an amazing influence in the relationship because how you show up will impact the other person. It's kind of like playing ping pong, that when you serve the ball differently or, you know, put a spin on the ball, it's going to impact how that person hits it back.
Well, I like that. What a great baseball metaphor to leave off with, right? That's Erin Smalley, as she was a guest of Susie Larson on the Live the Promise program just yesterday afternoon from 3 till 5. Now, coming up today on Susie's program, she will welcome speaker and author Lisa Harper. Lisa Harper will jump in. They'll discuss how to live in God's strength and not our own. Let's live the promise. Susie Larson is the host weekday afternoons, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time here on Faith Radio, so don't miss that. Now, have you noticed, if you're a parent or perhaps you work with young people in your church or whatever, have you noticed that there really is no such thing as an instruction manual for children? I had somebody warn me about that while my wife was pregnant, actually, before my son actually was born. And that's really cool. That was very, very enlightening and very important for me to know. I say this tongue-in-cheek, but the fact of the matter is that as we get older, as the life cycle evolves, as our kids grow, for those of us who are parents or even grandparents, sometimes we wish there were instruction manuals. But there aren't. That said, there are some very wise people in the Christian community and abroad that have some expert advice. Coming up in a little more than half an hour from now, our great friend Mike Haley. He's with Focus on the Family. He also has a great book out called Raising Highly Capable Kids. He's the program director, actually, for the Raising Highly Capable Kids program. He'll join us to talk about his efforts to equip parents with some insightful tools that will assist them as we try to raise up a generation of young people who will be productive and serve God's eternal purposes and be responsible citizens of our country. So that's coming up at about 7:35 this morning. Mike Haley, Raising Capable Kids. We'll have that conversation. As we continue, our great friend Abdu Murray, author of the book Grand Central Questions. We'll have him weigh in on what is a very, very disturbing trend that we've seen all within the last, 6 weeks? This very disturbing thing, this radicalized Islamic State group, and what this should tell us about the Islamic faith. How do Christians respond? Abdu Murray tells us next.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Well, good morning, 7:04. Welcome to it. It's Faith Radio. And I am Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, where we seek to connect faith to life. And I strive to be informative and challenging and hopeful and helpful as you get your day started. Coming up in less than half an hour from now, our great friend Mike Haley with CapableKids.com. That's the division of the Focus on the Family nonprofit organization. Find out what it means to raise capable kids in such a challenging and difficult era. We'll get to that coming up at about 7:35 this morning. Also, in moments, we'll check in with our great friend Abdu Murray. I am just such a fan of this gentleman and so appreciative of what Abdu Murray contributes to the broader dialogue, I guess you could say, across our country and around the world, and in particular to the Christian community. Abdu Murray is author of a book entitled Grand Central Questions. And what's interesting about this, he publishes a website. It's called EmbraceTheTruth.org. Now, Abdu Murray, if you're not familiar, was born into a Muslim family, and they encouraged him to study the Quran and study the history of Islam and such. Over the course of the years, he became a Christian. He is today a practicing evangelical Christian and addresses these very difficult issues of faiths that sometimes seem at odds with one another, worldviews that seem at odds with one another. And if you haven't already noticed it, let me reiterate again. We find ourselves at a very perplexing time. It's a very exciting time fraught with opportunity, but opportunity generally is accompanied with risk. And the risks are enormous around the world, quite frankly, but even here in the United States. We are smack dab in the middle of an ideological battle. It's the Western world, which has, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, the Western world historically has been defined for the most part by Judeo-Christian biblical values and a biblical worldview. You may find that difficult to believe, but that is the case for the Western world. But there's the Western view of life and the dignity of individual persons and human rights and those kinds of things, and then there is the radical Islam view of life. And the notion that you either conform and you come on board with radical Islam or you get beheaded. What is the thoughtful Christian approach to that? We'll talk about that coming up next. Abdu Murray, author of Grand Central Questions, joins us in seconds. It's now 7:07. I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
It's now 7:08. Good morning and welcome. It's Tuesday, by the way. Still to come, Raising Capable Kids. Mike Haley with CapableKids.com and Focus on the Family. He'll be joining us to talk about how to get started if we haven't already begun the process, or we're a little uncertain. I understand the feeling of uncertainty in parenting. Mike Haley will join us coming up at 7:35 for that. Now, Abdu Murray is our guest. He's on the guest line in just a moment, so I'll introduce him. I want to play some audio, and I know Abdu Murray has seen the full-length video of this, but this comes from just a few days ago, actually. And it's audio that we got from PBS Television, Public Broadcasting. It's a show hosted by a gentleman named Charlie Rose. He's been there for years. And there was quite a clash of worldviews on this program. And interestingly enough, television host Charlie Rose was interviewing television host Bill Maher. Now, I think both these gentlemen are very talented as broadcasters. I'm not particularly fond of anything that either one of them says. But Charlie Rose tries to articulate this view that's very popular here in the United States, by the way, this notion that somehow radical Islamists are murderous and deadly, but so are radical evangelical Christians who believe in the sanctity of life and those kinds of things. And Bill Maher, of all people, who, as far as I know, is a pretty secular, irreligious sort of man, Bill Maher says, no, Christians are not like this. I want you to listen to 43 seconds of this conversation. Just take this in for a moment, if you will. Hit it.
There are illiberal beliefs that are held by vast numbers of Muslim people that I don't think...
Vast number of Christians, too.
No, that's not true. Not true. Vast numbers of Christians do not believe that if you leave the Christian religion, you should be killed for it. Vast numbers of Christians do not treat women as second-class citizens. Vast numbers of Christians...
No, I agree with that.
...do not believe that if you draw a picture of Jesus Christ, you should get killed for it. So, yes, does ISIS do Khmer Rouge-like activities where they just kill people indiscriminately who aren't just like them? Yes. And would most Muslim people in the world do that or condone that? No. But most Muslim people in the world do condone violence.
Okay. Again, I'm not holding out either one of these hosts. That was Charlie Rose of PBS Television and Bill Maher, who hosts all kinds of things. Not holding out either one of these gentlemen as great purveyors of truth. But there's a little sample of the culture clash that surrounds us right here in the United States. Now we go to the guest line. Abdu Murray, author of Grand Central Questions, joins us. Abdu, welcome back to our program. Thanks for being here.
Awesome. It's great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
You are at the epicenter, as I see it, of this this clash of cultures and worldviews and clash of theology and spirituality, like most people are not. Give us your assessment of this ongoing dialogue here in the United States. Where are we at in terms of being willing to say, this is the way things are over here, and this is not the way things are over here? We seem to be unable to distinguish Christianity from Islam or what have you. Give us your assessment of things.
Well, I think we're walking a very fine tightrope, but it's a very precarious time, not just because of the dangers and global dangers to the West and to other things around the world, although those are, of course, real. We as Christians are walking a very thin tightrope that we have to walk. We have to walk it deftly. And what I mean by that is that if we get involved, I think, in what becomes perceived as culture wars, as an us versus them mentality, then I think we sink away from the edicts of what Christ was trying to do, which was make enemies into friends. But he did not say they weren't enemies. They, in fact, were enemies. But he did want to make them into friends, and I think that's the foremost thing we need to do. And if we buy into fear of our neighbors and fear of the other, in a sense, then we're going to sort of walk away from that careful edict that we have as Christians. However, we can't be naive either and not sort of call out the differences where they are, because the differences do, in fact, make a difference. I tend to focus on the theological differences, mm-hmm. but the ideological differences are there as well. Thank God that the extremists are a minority. Thank God that when Bill Maher says that most of them don't condone or don't want to engage in sort of Khmer Rouge-type violence, that he's right about that. But I also believe that some of the research is showing that many Muslims, in fact, an increasing number of Muslims are growing ever more concerned with Islamic violence and extremism, and most of them don't condone that kind of violence on mass levels. I think that there are populations that do because of the governments, but not necessarily the people within those governments.
Clearly, there is an Islamic population in parts of the world, even, I want to say, in the country of Iran. If you look at what I'm able to discern anyway about the younger demographics of Iranians, they may call themselves by the Islamic faith, but they want relationship with the Western world. They want to get along with people that have different beliefs. They want openness. They want true tolerance. And yet their country in Iran is ruled by an older bunch, shall we say, that views the world much differently. Is that part of the tension you're getting at?
That's exactly what I'm talking about, Austin. That's exactly it. You see Iran, which is the governmental system is very heavily Islamic as a result of the revolution in the 70s. And you see this happening, and you see this sort of control that is Islamic, or some would say Islamist, or whatever it might be. But the population in Iran is largely secular, is largely dissatisfied with what they see as extremist Islam, and they don't really have an interest in it. I did a talk show that beamed into Iran itself, but I was able to talk to 6 million Iranians and talk about Jesus. And I'll tell you, the feedback we got was tremendously positive, tremendously positive. So while you have these controlling bodies that would do the things or condone the things that Bill Maher was concerned about, what you don't have is a large populace that's doing it. The populace themselves aren't. So the voices that speak for the populace tend to be that way, but the populace themselves aren't always that way. And in fact, we're seeing that they're less and less inclined to agree with some of these extremist modalities and methodologies.
Abdu Murray, he's on our guest line. He is author of the book Grand Central Questions, Raised as a Muslim. He is a Christian today and articulates the truth and does so graciously in these very, very challenging times where, as he put it so eloquently, we're kind of walking on a tightrope. And Abdu, stand by. We'll continue in just a moment. I want to get more of your thoughts on that that high wire act, so to speak. We want to be diligent and faithful to what we're called to do. Stand by for more. It's now 7:15. You're listening to Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill.
You are the answer for my 7:17.
On Faith Radio, I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning 6 till 8. Abdu Murray, author of the book Grand Central Questions, weighing in with us once again. We're always privileged to have him here as we talk about competing spiritualities and theological debates and ideological tensions here in the U.S. and abroad. Abdu Murray, I want to get back to something you said earlier. You illustrated the present conditions, if you will, of Christians in the United States in particular, I think you were saying, as being kind of a tightrope walk. We don't want to be naive about the ideology that drives a minority of people to kill us because we don't embrace their ideology. Yet at the same time, we want to be gracious. We want to be loving. We want to take people who we recognize as enemies and make them friends, as Christ would have us do. What does that mean, that biblical calling, if you will, on the life of the Christian? What does that mean in the face of potentially having this Islamic State radical group right here in the U.S.? There are plenty of think tanks and research professionals who say, hey, they're here. They're plotting something nasty for us. What does that mean?
Well, as far as the most immediate concern in terms of our own public safety and these kind of things, we need to be ever vigilant. We need to make sure, you know, sort of what TSA says at airports, if you see something, say something, sort of, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But make sure you see something, because I think sometimes when there's a stir and there's a media frenzy, but there's also and there's a reality to it that's happening overseas and right here, we can quite easily, quite naturally, quite understandably give into a level of fear of our Muslim neighbor or give into a level of fear of our coworker or whatever it might be and thinking, when he whispers, what's he whispering? These kind of things. And that's the tightrope, because we can't give into that level of fear. Those people are, from all the studies showing, most likely the people you're encountering are just not intent on bodily harm. They just want to get a good job, have kids, have those kids have kids, and then pass away happy grandparents, you know, that kind of thing. It sounds very familiar because it's the American dream, as it were.
Sure.
And they want to take advantage of that, and we can't give in to that level of fear. But I think, here's the tightrope that I think that we need to walk and how we need to walk it. As Christians, when we need to support those public outworkings of defense and these kind of things, that's important. But we also need to recognize, I think fundamentally, when you've had hostile ideologies and hostile governments and hostile moves, military moves against Christians. And you're seeing it in China, for example. I just heard the news about all these churches being closed in China forcibly by the government there. What you have is essentially a quiet resistance. You have a show of Christ-like love, but also Christ-like conviction and the willingness to share your convictions with those around you. I'm a firm believer, and this may sound simplistic, but I don't think it is. I'm a firm believer that the Roman Empire, that Islamic governments, that secularized, heavily communist governments have come down or have changed their views based on Christian evangelism. And that's what I think we need to focus on. How do we share the love of Christ and the credibility of the gospel that touches the mind, that changes the heart, with conviction and with a good insight? And that's the key, I think, for the Christian in America.
I certainly would concur with that. As I studied the collapse of the communist regime in Eastern Europe, for example, which has happened over yours and my lifetimes, clear evidence that that happened, as a matter of speaking, kind of one heart, one soul at a time, with the quiet resistance of individual Christians, as you put it. Abdu Murray, at the same time, there are those who would take what you're saying and the way you're defining this notion of quiet resistance and saying, well, see, that's incompatible. We shouldn't be having our government do bombings over Syria or what have you and using military might to try to hurt ISIS. This sends the wrong message. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think it sends the wrong message. I think the message is always important based on who you're sending it to, and how you send it, of course, tailors to that. Not always, but sometimes. And most Muslims are very uncomfortable with ISIS. In fact, all Shiites are uncomfortable with it because ISIS hates the Shiites. So if you're protecting them in some sense, if you're using it to protect them, then you're sending the right message. The right message isn't West versus Islam. The right message is protection of life. Life is sacred, and sometimes we need to protect that life through the means of force that help us to protect other people's lives. The vast majority of violence in Islam is in the Muslim world is Muslim on Muslim violence. And so we're trying, in some senses, I think that it's a good message to send is that Muslims, we care about you enough to care about this. I think that's an important message as well. But it's not up to us to, the Christian populace needs to constantly be aware of the fact that in order to make friends out of enemies, that the Christian message is what it is. It is the reconciliation of God to humanity, and then we can have horizontal reconciliation amongst ourselves. Is it an easy thing to do? Absolutely not. Will it take a long time? It's taken 2,000 years so far, so it'll keep going, and it's going to be a tough effort.
Your point's well taken. In the midst of that, if I hear you correctly, and I'm not trying to agendize your own remarks here, Abdu Murray, mm-hmm. You're also saying as a nation, for example, here in the United States, we must avoid being naive. We must be vigilant, I think is the word you used. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, we have to avoid being naive, but also and remain vigilant, because safety is important, and it's for our children and for our families. We can't just sweep these things under the rug. I know there are some of our friends in Christian circles, and believe it or not, even in Islamic circles, who are pacifists who don't want to engage in these kind of things and think that it's up to God to sort this whole thing out. And I think that that's true in the ultimate sense. But we also have to realize that we have a responsibility to our fellow man to use whatever powers and responsibilities God has given to us for the sake of other human beings.
Abdu Murray, his book is called Grand Central Questions. You can find him at embracethetruth.org. He is out speaking across the country and around the world on these very sensitive issues of competing worldviews and the different understandings of God. He helps Christians in particular sort out the details. Abdu Murray, thanks as always for being with us. We look forward to speaking again soon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Good to be with you. It's now 7:25. This is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8. When we come back, let's check in with Breakpoints.
Back to Austin Hill in the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
7:34, good morning and welcome. This is Faith Radio and I am Austin Hill. Honored to be with you. Weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life, and as I strive to be informative and challenging and hopeful and helpful. Coming up before the hour's over with some thoughts on making this day really, really count, making every moment that we have here on Earth count. And interestingly, a message that ties right back to the teachings of the Scriptures will actually come from a television news anchor. I'll explain coming up in just a few moments. Last Friday, I was away from the program. I took a day off. My wife and I traveled out of town, and we met up with a couple that we had been dear friends with last decade when my wife and son and I lived in the state of Arizona. Our kids grew up together. My son grew up with the other family's children. We've been apart for about 4 years. It was a great time to reacquaint ourselves and kind of connect with old dear friends over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and so forth. One of the things that came up, and it was a pretty big part of our discussion, was, of course, our kids. And the notion that no matter how equipped, no matter how perfect, how idyllic a child's upbringing is, things can always go awry. Isn't that just kind of one of the common frailties among parents, especially in our present era, it would seem? You never know how things are going to turn out, and the fact of the matter is that kids don't come with instruction manuals. Joining us to talk about this phenomena, the ever-elusive missing instruction manual phenomena, Mike Haley. He heads up CapableKids.com. He's with the Focus on the Family organization, and he joins us now. Mike, I understand you're still searching for the instruction manual. How's that going?
Yeah, exactly. I talk about that almost every time I speak to parents, that, and that's part of our training, actually, is that these kids don't come with an instruction manual. So we need to do all we can to kind of equip parents and equip ourselves with, you know, not only scripture, but the truths that are out there that show that kids can be given kind of a leg up when parents are intentional.
Sure. And intentional being the key word there. And I talk about this elusive instruction manual with tongue firmly planted in cheek. But one of the things that really jumps out at me, and I'm sure it's this way by design, the notion that we can raise highly capable kids. Tell us about what it means for a child to be highly capable.
Well, there are certain components in a child's life. Actually, the program is based on 40 assets. There's 40 developmental assets that research has shown that if these children have these assets invested in their life, they're less likely to engage in high-risk behaviors and more likely to engage in positive behaviors. So the more of these assets that we give a child, again, the better chance we're giving them of helping them to become a caring, healthy, responsible adult.
And what kind of assets are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the 40 developmental assets are then broken up into 8 different categories. So it's things like support, empowerment, boundaries and expectations, constructive use of time, a commitment to learning, helping them to understand positive values, caring for others, showing integrity, being socially competent, and then again having a positive personal identity. So given those 8 categories, we encourage parents to understand these 40 assets. And really the research, it's kind of astounding that shows the difference in kids that don't have these assets in their life versus children that do have these assets.
Yeah, very interesting. Mike Haley, he is with CapableKids.com. That's an outreach of the Focus on the Family nonprofit organization. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Mike, I know one of the things that you address, one of the broad categories of topics that you speak about and your associates do as well, that is the notion of a child's resiliency, their ability to be resilient and bounce back even in the midst of hard times. And as I was saying earlier, even our best efforts at parenting sometimes involve difficult situations. Tell us about building a sense of resiliency into kids.
Well, I mean, it's just as simple as getting parents an understanding that our children need to understand the tools. You know, we can tell them, you know, don't smoke, don't drink alcohol with your friends. But if we really walked them through a scenario of, you know, kind of role-playing, here's a cigarette, what would you do? What would you tell that friend? Or here's some drugs or here's some alcohol. And we don't give our kids the tools to kind of be resilient. We tell them not to do these things, but we really need to help them to understand how to get out of negative situations. For instance, I've told my kids, I have a 14 and a 12-year-old, both boys, and we've told them, look, use us as your out. If you're offered drugs, tell them, look, my parents have told me that they're going to do random drug testing in our house. If I ever come up positive, I lose my ability to ever drive again as long as I'm in their home. So it's things like that, building in responses before they actually come into the life of our children.
Very interesting. Have you conducted, if I may ask, random drug testing with your children?
No. I don't feel that there's a need for it. I have a pretty good kids at this point, you know, and have open lines of communication with them. But, you know, if there was ever an opportunity and I felt like my kids weren't being honest with me or their behavior was showing some differences, I probably would engage in that.
Yeah. Mike Haley, he's with CapableKids.com. He's on our guest line here on Faith Radio. It strikes me, as I understand it, Mike, part of what you're seeking to do and part of what you are doing with Capable Kids is incorporating not just parents in the process of raising a child, but also making meaningful and productive connections with the broader community, the local school perhaps, people in the church and in the other areas of the broader community. Tell us about that. I guess I want to call it more of a holistic approach, if that makes sense, but tell us where you're going with that.
Yeah, I love that term, holistic approach. And that's one of the exciting things about our program, is that we're offering really kind of a step into the school for the churches. One of the things that we do, or one of the delivery mechanisms, is we go out and we train people from the faith community that are engaged in their local elementary schools, and we help them with this program. So they will go to the school and say, look, we would like to offer this 13-week parenting program to your parents in the school. We'd like, as a church, to offer this. We will lead the classes. We will buy the manuals for the parents that attend. And we've seen some really cool things happen. For instance, we had a church that launched this in the local elementary school that they've engaged in. They were involved in, you know, putting shoes on the kids' feet and filling their backpack. It's kind of an impoverished community. But they went in and offered this to a group of parents. There were 30 parents that went through it. And it's interesting because some of these parents had never graduated from anything. So they made a really big deal about this 13-week program. The superintendent came. The parents were given certificates of completion. So it was really a beautiful moment for the church to offer that cool cup of water to these parents that were looking for some help.
That is great. How do you advise parents that maybe want to be involved with the Capable Kids program, or be involved in their local school, even church groups that want to be involved in the local school, and the school district says, well, you don't embrace our LGBT policy, or you're not pro-choice when it comes to abortion, you have no role to play here, go away. What do you tell a church group that is confronted with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a difficult thing. There are those opportunities, but I think churches can build some relationship if they're in and they're actually serving that community and that school and not proselytizing. I believe that that's kind of the reason that this one church was really, the doors were swung open for them, because they had gone in and served that community and served those parents first and had built some trust. And it was amazing what happened. You know, we had one scenario where there was a woman that went through, a non-believer, non-Christian woman who went through the program. And one of the cool things about the program is that we allow those people that go through it to teach it the next semester if they're interested in doing that. Well, this woman was kind of impoverished. She didn't feel comfortable leading it because she didn't feel like she had the appropriate clothing to teach a class in front of other parents. So some women from the church took her out, bought her clothes, were able to minister to her that way, and since then she has become a Christian and now is a great proponent of not only the program, but of course now her faith. And so it's really neat what can happen when we learn to serve first and meet the people's needs.
That said, Mike Haley, how does a pastor that's perhaps listening to our conversation, or a lay church ministry leader, they're hearing this, they say, wow, this sounds good, I want to know more, how does a person get involved?
They could call me at 855-REZ, R-E-Z, kids, K-I-D-Z. We haven't learned how to spell. But
That's a great abbreviation for resiliency. I get it. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. So they could call us. And, you know, one of the things that we're committed to is, if there are communities that are in need, Focus on the Family is committed to launching this benevolently in 6 communities each year around the country. So we completely come, we outfit, we give all of the materials for about 3 semesters or a year and a half until that community can begin to raise the awareness or raise the funding to support it themselves. So we're not only committed to serving, but we really encourage others to serve as well.
We appreciate what you do. Thank you so much for being with us. Mike Haley, he's with the CapableKids.com. Find him there, and we'll make sure to get a link on our website as well. We look forward to talking again. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Have a great day.
When we come back, let's talk about living every moment with purpose, with great intention, and being grateful for the time that we have on this earth. An amazing story about, yes, God's truth as it pertains to those issues, coming from, of all people, a television news anchor. I'll explain what I mean coming up next. 7:46 now, it's Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. 47 on Faith Radio. Good morning and welcome. I'm Austin Hill, and it is an honor to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. If you have ever had the privilege, and I'll call it a privilege, it's gut-wrenching at times, it's difficult, but if you've ever had the privilege of walking side by side with somebody who is, they have a terminal illness. They know that the ailments that befalls them right now will eventually kill them. If you've ever been in the presence of somebody that way, in that condition, if you've ever had the privilege, as I said, of walking side by side with them, you know that when an individual is faced with those kinds of circumstances, there's some sense in which that individual understands life. Even though their life is threatened and probably imminently coming to an end, there's something that they understand about life that the rest of us don't understand. And I say this realizing that so much of what we do in our culture and in media and even Christian media is all about what you're going to do today, about being out and about, about being alive and active. And there are those, I'm sure, within the reach of my voice right now who cannot be active. They are bedridden, or they are homebound, or perhaps they are struggling with a terminal illness. There is a video that's being widely published all over the Internet. Our folks, friends over at thechristianpost.com, published this video, and right they should. They did a great write-up about it as well. It's all over YouTube and whatnot. And what an extraordinary testimony to that reality, that those whose lives are most gravely endangered sometimes understand the essence of our earthly existence better than the rest of us. It's a video of a gentleman named Dave Benton. He is a news anchor at WCIA Television in Champaign, Illinois. That's Channel 3, CBS 3 in Champaign, Illinois. And he has been battling brain cancer for the past several months. Took a leave of absence, as I understand it, from his news anchor role for a period of time to get treatment. Came back to work. He's been on the job for several months now. And late last week, he made an announcement on the WCIA CBS3 local TV morning show that his cancer is back and that he only has a short period to live. And I want you to hear this man's words. I was inspired by this, and I think the Lord can use this in everyone's life, everyone who will hear this today. Give a listen.
We've got some serious stuff to discuss, and we are an open book, and we wanted to let you guys in on something that we've known for a while.
Yes, as you know, I told you a few weeks ago that my brain cancer is back. What I have learned in the last few days, in fact, as I have seen doctors several times, I'm learning more about what my future holds. Basically, my cancer is back, and it's too big for surgery and radiation. Doctors have told me that I may have 4 to 6 months to live. Now, I've also decided to try a new treatment. It's an antibody treatment and a chemo treatment to slow down its growth. The goal here is to have a few more days and to make them the best that they can be in the life that I have. As you know, I'm a born-again Christian. I believe that I'm in God's hands. I'm at peace, and I know that He's going to take care of the days ahead, and that the goal here is to have the best ones possible.
Well, thank you, Dave Benton, for being so bold and so courageous as to share that with us. And isn't it just the case? I say this because I need to be reminded of this moment by moment, day by day. Isn't it just the case that, yes, Dave Benton has got the diagnosis, he's got the word from multiple doctors, he said that there's only a few months left. Nobody knows how much more time they have here on planet Earth. I certainly don't. And the reality that ultimately he is in God's hands, that's true for you, that's true for me. And again, thank you to this courageous man, Dave Benton. May we all be in prayer for he and his family. He certainly gives the appearance, and what goes on camera and when the microphone is on is oftentimes very different from what goes on behind the scenes. And that's appropriately so. I'm sure there are moments of enormous grief, enormous pain, enormous anxiety. But may we all be in prayer for his family that he's preparing to leave behind as he takes the next step. Thank you, Dave Benton, and may God bless him. It's 7:52. You're listening to Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues in moments. Don't go anywhere.
I'm never gonna let you know.
Again, a little delay here at the microphone. Another air guitar moment here on Faith Radio. I can't help myself. I love the music. It's all a part of the program, right? Come on. Anyway, it's at 7:54, and this is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill, and thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And thank you for your support. We had our Fall Share fundraiser event last week, as you probably heard here on Faith Radio. If by chance you were unable to give us a call and come on board as a supporter of Faith Radio, doors always open, and I'll just be very blunt about it. We are fully listener-supported. And we rely on people taking proactive steps to financially support us. We can't do that without you and others who are willing to come on board. We make it very easy. We make it very affordable and very convenient, quite frankly. And so you can get to us anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Thank you for your generosity and support that we saw an outpouring of last week. And people phoning in and emailing, contacting us through the website. Reiterating and articulating how much they enjoy the programs, this program, and Connecting Faith with Neil Statham, Live the Promise with Susie Larson, our great Bible teaching programs. Thank you for that. The door's always open. The invitation stands, shall we say, to come on board as a supporter at myfaithradio.com. Now, that said, we have coming up tomorrow on this program, Austin Hill in the Morning, our great friend Bill English. He's the purveyor, the publisher of BibleAndBusiness.com. He'll join us to talk about some insightful living, what it means to live biblically, shall we say, in the midst of the marketplace, when owning and operating a business, when working as an employee of somebody else's business, and plotting careers and planning for the future. What does that mean through the lenses of scriptural truth? We'll talk with Bill English about that coming up tomorrow. Also, I had the privilege of talking with this lady who's just an extraordinary guest. Her name is Arlene Pellicane, and she has a new book out called Growing Up Social. Now, on the parenting front, as I've stated many times this morning, there's always a new twist and turn in the parenting process, right? These seem like very harrowing days to be raising children, and I know my parents said the same thing when I was a kid. My parents and I, when I was a kid, we were not facing this thing called social media. And we'll have a conversation with Arlene Pellicane about this tomorrow. Again, she's got this book out called Growing Up Social. Had the privilege of talking with her actually a couple of weeks ago. And she makes the case to say that, quote-unquote, social media at times gives rise to some of the most antisocial behavior that we've known in our culture. And there's ways to kind of rein it in. In fact, I think I'll even ask her coming up tomorrow on the program, is it necessarily an important thing to post photos of our dessert on Facebook? Is that really all that social, or maybe is that kind of overkill? Anyway, Arlene Pellicane talking about having good boundaries with social media. We'll get to that. And we'll also check in with our great friend David Smith from Smith Investment Management. He is a private investment and asset manager and also teaches children in churches about economics and investing. We'll try to take in some of his wisdom as well. And I'll be asking him on tomorrow's broadcast about what we should be making of the fact, if anything, that the fact that you've now got, I guess, sort of a growing cry, if you will, from people in what I would call the investor class who are saying there's a crash coming. The values of stocks on the stock market, they are overpriced and they're going to collapse. And our government debt, our U.S. federal government debt and even state government debt can't continue to grow and grow and grow without being addressed, and that there would be no consequences to that. I mean, there are some very, very wealthy, very powerful people in our country and around the world who started to say that. Like, and I monitor these kinds of things. I watch this kind of stuff very, very carefully. But all within the last 3 or 4 weeks, there's been a sharp uptick of that. So we'll talk to David Smith from Smith Investment Management about that coming up on tomorrow's program. Thank you for listening. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. Our guests that we have heard from today, they'll all be posted there. Just give us a few moments to get the digital content up, so to speak. Have a great day, and thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Faith Radio Network. podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.